Good evening. My name is Keith, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
And my home group's a Wednesday night big book study group. My sobriety date is July 15, 2003. And I don't say that to brag. I just say that to let the newcomer know that it is possible to stay sober. Give me a minute. My security blanket's not here tonight, so. But my big security blanket is here. You know, I joke with Rachel about not wanting to do this and glad it's almost over, which is true. I am glad it's almost over. But, you know, it's all due to God that I'm up here. You know, I don't take any credit for that. You know, I sit here in amazement that I've been sober 10 years through the grace of God, through the steps, through the fellowship, through my sponsor, my sponsees. And I've seen guys come up here and they're good at this. You know, they're like Peter and Russell and Joe, Stevie B. But I was talking to a friend of mine on Saturday. And the last couple weeks, I'd start my talk off by saying, I'm talking to the newcomer. Like, I wasn't talking to the people that got time. And she made a point to tell me, she goes, I shouldn't say that anymore because people, she's got 20 plus years sober. And she said that she's been listening to this because she lives in West Palm and she can't drive down here. And she said that she's been learning things that I've been saying up here. And I'm like, what? Like, seriously? And that brought me back to when I first got sober. I went to the Big Book Seminar for the first couple years that I got sober. And I saw Joe and Charlie do it, the Stutz, the last two times they did it before they retired. And Willie B., she would do the 12 and 12 of the seminar. And this is a woman at the time who had 44 years of sobriety at the time. And so one day she was going through the 12 and 12, and she was like, she got done with her talk, and she was like, listen, I like to remain green. And I'm like, what is she talking about in my head? And she's like, because green things grow. And she's like, I can never stop learning, even though I'm 44 years sober. And so when Diane, when I was talking to this lady, she was like telling me some things. And we were just talking about recovery and stuff. And but I'll get into that a little bit later. So tonight we're on step 10. I'm going to be all over the place. So continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. The principle behind step 10 is perseverance. So by this time, you know, by when I get to step 10, you know, I've done some work, a lot of work. And just a brief recap, you know, I came in here in July of 2003, a beaten and broken person. And I wanted to die, like literally wanted to die. And God had other plans. So he put me with these gentlemen who were armed with the facts, like about this book. And so in step one, I get that. You know, I get that I'm powerless. What makes me powerless is the doctor's opinion. And in that doctor's opinion, they told me what my problem was. And for a long time, I didn't know what my problem was. You know, I like to drink, of course. And I like to do other things, of course. But when I wasn't doing that, life wasn't that bad, you know what I mean? But when I started doing that, things got bad. So I attributed that to drinking. So I figured if I just stopped drinking and doing other things, life would get better, which it did. So I come to Florida on a fourth geographical cure, you know what I mean? The Marine Corps, went in there. I learned how to drink better, saw the world, but it didn't fix me, you know? The girls back then didn't fix me. The money back then didn't fix me. So I find out what my problem is in step one. And we were at our meeting last Wednesday and we covered this, and I thought about that because I'm talking to people, and a newcomer, I was once a newcomer, and I was sitting in rooms and I'd just be, you know, judging, and like somebody's talking to me about recovery and talking about the program and talking about Dr. Penn, and I'm like, whatever, dude. So in the book, it says this on page 38. And again, in the big book, Bill spent four chapters making sure I understood what my problem was, right? So I didn't have to go to a speaker meeting to hear your story to say if I'm an alcoholic or not. So there's some golden nuggets in these first four chapters, but see if this fits if you're a newcomer and if you're anything like I was on bottom of page 38. So it says, some of you are thinking, yes, what you tell us is true, meaning about allergy, obsession, alcoholism, but it doesn't fully apply. I admit we have some of the symptoms, but we have not gone to the extremes you fellas did, or not likely to. For we understand our well so well of what you told us that such things could not happen again. So that was me, right? I got 3 DUIs in 6 months. So after the second one, I get out of jail. I'm saying I'm not doing that again. But I get out and I go right to the bar and I get another DUI. Crazy. So it says, we had not lost everything in life through drinking, and we certainly don't intend to. Thanks for the information. That was my attitude, you know what I'm saying? Thanks, but no thanks. So then we come to step two. And in the book, after page 45, it doesn't talk about drinking anymore. You know what I mean? It does not talk about drinking. So I come to find out that drinking is not my problem. For a long time, it was a solution to my problem, so I thought. And now we're going to talk about God. And this is what Joe told me. And I'm like, oh, Lord. I didn't want nothing to do with God, except for when I was in trouble. You know, he was my coffin bellhop at the time. And so he tells me that. And given where I was in my life at the point, at that time, you know, it says in step three, in the 12 of 12, reconsider or die how I have this thing. And now step two is not telling me to believe right now. So if you're new and you hear all this God talk, it is about God, but you don't have to believe right this second. Just know that no human solution, and marry this to your past. The treatment centers, Judge Beach, Solutions, Joe, my sponsor, none of that stuff could keep me stopped permanently, you know. So I bought into that for a minute, you know. I was like, okay, I don't want what I had. I'm willing to give this a shot. So that's all I'm doing, you know what I mean? So I get to step three. And this is where my talk with Diane, you know, it brought me, like, I had like an aha moment. And I've heard this for years. Like, Joe's been telling me this. I told Joe about this Sunday morning after church. So in step three, I'm making a decision to turn my will, which is my thoughts, and my life, which is my actions, over to a care of God as I understand them. What does that mean? Well, when I'm new, I don't know what the hell that means. I just know that I can't do it. And I don't know what God they're talking about. So at first, I'm turning my care and my stuff over to my sponsor, the rooms, and that's fine. But talking to this friend of mine on Saturday, she said, you know, 20 plus years sober, she says that step three is the most important step in her life. And I go, what do you mean by that? So if I'm turning my will, which is my thoughts, and my life, which is my actions, over the care of God, what does that mean? And she said to me like this. She goes, well, what are my thoughts that morning or that day? Like, what am I thinking about? What's running? And I'm like, damn, I never thought about it like that. Her actions, 22 years plus older, what are her actions? How is she living, right? So we're going to come to find out that step 10 is 4 through 9 all the time. So here's a woman with 22 years, and she says step 3 is the most important decision or the most important step. And I mean, it's true once I broke it down. Like, every morning for the last 10 years, I made a decision. I'm making that decision to turn my will and my life over to care guys I understand them. And there's certain things I do to do that, and I'll talk about that later. So in step 3, I'm doing that. And she said, you know, and I said, well, I always assumed that it was me agreeing to do the rest of the work. And for a newcomer, that is true. You know what I mean? I didn't want to hear about God, so all I could do at that time was, I'm saying I'm in, is do the rest of the work. The longer I'm sober, it's much more than that. You know what I mean? It's me saying that I'm not in control anymore. And that's a hard pill to swallow. That's a hard thing to do, is to give myself up to something that I don't know, I can't see. When you're new. But I'm dying when I get here. So any argument, debate I have about that, you know, and we see it all the time. People come in and they get to the Alcoholics Anonymous, or they get into treatment, and they get a white chip, whatever, and I'll do anything. You know what I mean? But I won't give her up. Or I won't give that job up where I'm in the phone room lying to people. Or I won't, you know, whatever it is. Like, I'm dying, though, but I want to negotiate this thing. And Joe wasn't having none of that, you know what I mean? So I do my four-step inventory, and in my four-step inventory, I find out who you get when I show up on the scene. I'm a scumbag, I'm a liar, I'm a cheat, I'm irresponsible, my word means nothing. Of course my life sucks when I get here, given how I'm showing up. And I see it for the first time in black and white, you know what I mean? And so I got that four-step done. And again, I talked about it a couple weeks ago. The four-step is not the boogeyman. So, you know, you hear people who've never done a four-step telling a person, you know, who's thinking about doing a four-step, oh, you don't do that four-step. But that person's never done a four-step, you know what I mean? But the four-step is the key to the rest of the work, if you didn't know that. So I did my four step. I do my fifth step with my sponsor, and you know, for the first time in my life, somebody knows all of me. I bare my soul to this man. Like, he knows who I am. Like, other people knew bits and pieces, or what I wanted them to know. The masquerade I would show. Like I told you guys before, I was a chameleon. I could adapt to any situation, given where I was. Very inauthentic. So I tell my sponsor this stuff, man, and you know, he tells me some of the things he did. And it wasn't like I had a white light experience. I didn't have a white light experience. It was just very freeing. For the first time, you know, the past couldn't hurt me, so to speak. Like, meaning somebody else knew all my secrets. But I'm still the same person. I'm still the same scumbag I was. Nothing's changed. I haven't really done anything. I just catalog. I just know myself a little bit better, but nothing's changed. I'm still that same person. So I'm in solutions for about 4 months. And I start to buy into this deal a little bit because I'm not thinking about drinking as much and I'm not thinking about getting high as much and none of that stuff. And okay, so something's working. You know, I trust another man. Something's working. So then we get to 6 and 7. And I talked about it and I showed you guys that little demonstration a couple weeks ago with the water. This is where recovery starts. This is where, you know, the rubber meets the road. The 12 and 12 calls it where the boys meet the men and the women meet the girls. And I do this step 6, you know, I'm asking God to get rid of that man I uncovered in step 4 and 5. And then 7, I'm asking to make me the man I want to become. I'll be doing that for the rest of my life. Like, we don't do the steps and we're done. Like, we don't graduate from these things. So 6 and 7 is a daily grind, daily grind, daily grind, daily grind. What does that look like? Well, you hear people talk about page 85, 86, and 87. That's in step 11. But I was taught to do this part of that page when I got sober. Like, before I got here, I had no game plan for life. I had no plan for success. Like, I'd get up in the morning, I set my alarm for the last possible minute, I'd brush my teeth maybe sometimes, I'd smoke a cigarette and other things, and I'd bounce out the door, right? No preparation. Looking to be offended, looking to be pissed off, somebody's going to get the wreckage. For pissing me off. Like, no game plan. But Joe had me, you know, this is the game plan he set up for me. Like, get up in the morning a half an hour early, right? I don't turn on Fox Channel 7 News, because that's just very uplifting. I don't turn on Sports Center. I don't, you know, text. I don't do none of that stuff. You know, I hit my knees in the morning. First thing I do for me was I rolled out of bed so I didn't forget. And I just, my prayer was very simple. Lord, thank you for waking me that morning. Help me stay sober today and help another alcoholic. That was it. Then I go out and I'd sit and I just, like, he had me imagine my day. Because I uncovered in 4 and 5 who you got when I showed up on the scene, right? I found out all my character defects. So he had me imagine my day, meaning who am I going to see that day? I go to work. I got my incidental contacts. I got my customers, whatever. How are you going to be with these people, Keith? Who are they going to get that's different than that person? And I did that, right? And I still do that to this day. And does it work every, like, how I plan it in the morning? No, it does not. I talked about it a couple weeks ago at my job, very stressful. I'm in the pool business, so to speak, and, like, we're a big distribution company. So we get all types of people coming in. We get the owners of the companies coming in. We get the homeowners coming in. We get the subcontractors coming in. And they're not sober people, you know. They're smoking weed in my parking lot, and they're drunk. And I got homeowners, very rude, like, you know, hotty-totty people. And I got the owner of the company. He owes money. His account's locked up, but he's been doing business for 20 years, so we should give it to him and all this craziness. So me being sober, you know, and I'm on this spiritual beam, so to speak, I lose it. like I literally cussed a customer out like a month ago. And I could have lost my job for that. But anyway, it wasn't a good thing. You know what I mean? And that person had power over me that day. There was no God in the situation whatsoever. So I talked about it, like, just because I do the steps doesn't mean I'm rendered white as snow. I don't become rendered white as snow. I still have character defects. Sometimes they're more glaring than other times. But that day, very glaring. And my coworkers sometimes, I'm in a position of authority at work, so I got to watch that I don't belittle employees sometimes. And, you know, I lose it on them sometimes too, because I think, you know, are you that stupid? But very sick man. So that's just the things that happen, you know, in daily life. Like, life is going to happen. Just because I'm sober doesn't mean that I am Moses, so to speak. You know what I mean? I'm still a broken man. I've only been here a little bit. So that's six. You know, that's what I do. And then when that happens, right, I have this, it doesn't feel right inside. Like, I feel, especially after cussing that customer out and cussing one of my employees out or arguing with anybody, like, I have this, what they call in the 12 and 12, an emotional hangover. What that is say something happens, and the result of it is you're pissed off, whatever, you're angry, whatever, and I sit in it, right? And we'll talk about what happens when you step 10, but I sit in that stuff. So before I got sober, I sit in it, I take it home with me. Like, if it happened at 8 in the morning, from 8 to 4:30, I am pissed off. Like, my day is ruined. The next customer is going to feel the effects of that last conversation. The last employee is going to feel the next, that he's just going to get the worst of Keith. So today, when these things happen for me, I go outside. I used to smoke cigarettes, but now I vape. So I go out in the back and I start my day over. I do a spot check inventory. What is a spot check inventory? Well, we'll talk about that a little bit too. So these are the things that happen. So just want to, you know, let the newcomer know or people know that just because I'm sober, life still happens. I am still a broken person. I'm not perfect. Don't claim to be, but it happens. So in step seven, I recognize that. And we have the seven-step prayer. And it's important that six and seven, because it's teeing us up for eight and nine. Eight and nine is about amends. And we talked about that last week. And amends, I'm repairing the relationships with people. Right, I'm repairing the damage I've done in the past. And I explained last week what those amends look like to my family, to the DMV, and all that stuff. And after the meeting last week, Allie had, you know, she told me I glossed over an important fact that happened in my amends process. The license thing, again, I didn't have my license for 12 years because of my DUIs. And before I got sober, I was driving still illegally, right? I'd be driving down the street with a beer between my lap and something on the dashboard. And that was just, you know, my entitlement. Like, I'm entitled to drive. I serve my country, whatever the lie I told myself. I was a Marine, so I get to drive. They pull me over, I'll just tell them I'm a Marine, they'll let me go. Not the case. So when I got sober, you know, I didn't drive or none of that stuff. And then there came time to get my license. It says in the book that we'll go to any lengths over victim of alcohol. And I told you, we talked about it last week, how I turned myself into the police. And we don't do that where I'm from. Like, police, no bueno. So I turn myself in, I get out. I'm thinking I'm gonna get my license back then, right then and there. But I find out that the clock doesn't start ticking for your revocation until you turn yourself in. So that was like, are you kidding me? That was in 2007. So from 2007 to 2012, no license. But no warrants either. Past can't hurt me no more. And God saw fit that every job I had was either in walking distance or biking distance of the house. Pretty cool. So it comes time, April 2012. I'm giddy now because in February I made all the plans. I'm coming up to Georgia. I did all the preparation for this trip, you know. My brother, who I made amends to, invited me to stay at his house the whole time I was there. Trust me with the house keys and stuff. I go to Georgia. Every morning I'm praying, planning on my day, what I'm going to do, how am I going to be with these people. My brother's a cop in Atlanta. Funny how that worked out, you know what I mean? And if you know anything about Georgia's little law and stuff, they run you all over the city. So I'm going back and forth. It's like going from Miami to West Palm this whole day. The first lady I get to, she tells me, you know, what are you doing here? And I tell her what I'm here, and she's like, well, before I send you away, I'm like, listen, you're not sending me away. Very nice, so to speak, but you're not sending me away. Well, you need this, you need that, you need this, you need that. I'm holding my cool, right? My brother's losing his mind. He is like pulling the badge out in Atlanta PD. This happened in the suburbs, so they don't care about him being an Atlanta cop. And he's flipping out. And I'm just cool, calm, and collected. And he's looking at me like, why aren't you getting mad? And I'm like, listen, bro, the light's at the end of the tunnel. No, that was God. That was God's reaction for me, because normally I'd have been like, you're right, fucking, you know, I would have been, let's hop the counter and let's get my stuff. But I didn't do that, you know what I mean? Russell calls it undisturbable. That day, for that week, I was undisturbable, right? And now it's reminding me of this, because when I get back to Florida, I stayed there an extra 3 days because they weren't giving me my stuff right away like I thought they were going to. So when I get home, she's upset. She's going crazy, you know? She's talking to her mom and stepfather up in Pennsylvania. They're going like, this is wrong. You served your country. It's a black thing. And I'm like, no, it's not. I'm like, no. They're like, why aren't you getting upset? And I'm like, listen, again, the light's at the end of the tunnel. There's nothing they can do. They're just delaying the inevitable. That wasn't me. That was God. And she's like, that was, you know, she made a point of telling me that I didn't talk about that. And so I think that I should have shared that. But anyway, that wasn't me. So my amends are done, right? We hear the promises at every meeting. But if you don't know, there's promises throughout this whole book, through each step process. Promises, promises, promises. Just remember, when you got here, remember your last 48, 72 hours out there. Remember how you felt, where you were. And throughout this whole book, newcomer or not, each step is a promise, pretty much. But what we mainly talk about, or they read at most meetings, is the 9-step promises. So what I just described to you was, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. Halfway through with what? The amends process, right? Not the steps. Just because you do a 4-step inventory, they're not talking about the promises right there. They're talking about halfway through your amends. It says, we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. Like, I knew peace and serenity that week when I was in Georgia. Nothing they could do could touch me. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Our experience can benefit others. This is my experience to you. Because if I can get sober, anybody can get sober. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. And I don't know about you, but that was huge when I got here. I felt useless, self-pity, abundantly clear. No purpose. We will lose interest in selfish things. Imagine that. When I got here, it was all about me or what you could do for me. And gain interest in our fellows. I wasn't thinking about you when I got here, unless you could do something for me. Or if you were a female, then let's go through the steps or whatever. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Again, this is all about attitude. They talk about attitudes a lot in this book. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. That's debatable, but it's a little bit less than it was. I told you about a couple weeks ago, my economic insecurity was glaring. We went out for Thanksgiving, and I almost lost her on Thanksgiving because she said, let's go to Target and check out the Black Friday sales. But what I heard was, let's go spend your paycheck. I'm a sick man. Again, not rented white as snow, still crazy. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which should baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. I realized that in Georgia. Every time somebody kept coming at me with, why aren't you getting upset? I realized that was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Like, there was no need to get upset. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, which is a spiritual experience, or sometimes slowly, which is a spiritual awakening. Mine have been slow. They will always materialize if we work for them. Operative word, if we work for them. So it says, this thought brought us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Stop right there for a second. Operative word being continue. Like for me, when those things happened at work, I had to make an amends for those things, right? I had to. And I hear different things about this, like the 10-step inventory at night or whatever. And what I say to that is, when I talked about the spot check inventory, like, say I get pissed off at 8 in the morning. Am I supposed to wait until I got home at 11 o'clock at night to go through that? Right? No. What I could do, and I had good teachers, man, they taught me all this stuff. What I'm telling you up here is all learned stuff. Nothing's original. But I had great teachers. Spot check inventory. Right then and there, I can do a quick 4-step inventory. Like, who pissed me off? Rachel. Why did she piss me off? She asked me to speak here for 12 years. What did it affect? What instincts of character was affected? All right, my self-esteem, not good enough to do this. Speaking of that stuff, I got two angels sitting right here. I got lots of angels in this room. But if you were here for the second step inventory, my second step, you saw me wig out up here and black out. If there was a door here or over there, or if that window was open, I'd have been gone. Gone. But after I got through that, you know, I sat back down over there, Michelle and Coco, man. And they barely know me. I mean, they see me around, but the love and comfort and telling me I could do it, you're doing all right, was amazing. Hence, I'm still doing this, and because of God too. But anyway, so what was affecting me? My instincts, what was affected, and then what part did I play in it? Well, I said yes. I could have said no. Why didn't I look at? I did say no, actually. But Allie wasn't having none of that. Was it people pleasing? Like, what was I? What was my motive for whatever the case may be? But that's what you do with the spot check inventory. And then, what character defects was on display? And then, do I owe an amends? If I do, I go take care of that thing right then and there, right? I don't hold it until that day. Because the book tells me. So let's go on. We vigorously commence to live this way of living as we clean up the past. Now, we just read the 9-step promises. Here come the 10-step promises. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. Right? So I've been hardwired and set my ways for 35 years. It's not going to be taken overnight. Continue to watch out for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. That's all step 4. When these crop up, we ask God to remove them at once, 6 and 7. We discuss them with someone immediately, step 5, and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone, 8 and 9. So 4 through 9 all the time. Right? It's a way of life today. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Now, that I'm still working on. Love and tolerance of others. Again, in the 12 and 12 on page 90, it talks about the spiritual axiom. Meaning, if something bothers me, there's something wrong with me. Right? And I heard it, you know, and that's with anything. And I don't like, I mean, when I first heard that, I'm like, that's full of crap. That ain't true. But if I think about it, it is. Like, if something bothers me, there's something wrong with me. So let's say, for instance, I used to be very rigid about this program thing, right? I used to be very rigid about speaker meetings. I'd be very rigid about the program and how you do the program. And I had an awakening when Peter was doing the steps. I would, you know, go to a speaker meeting, right? And the speaker would get up there, and I'm not going to talk about the war stories and the drunkalogs. And the next 45 minutes, it's a drunkalog. Then he says, I did the steps. But I would walk out in the middle of that guy speaking. Like, not even in the middle of it. As soon as he started, I'm in fourth grade, I'm out the door, right? Then I go home and to Joe, and I character assassinate the guy, the Joe. But I don't know what that man's been through, right? I don't know what kind of work he's been doing or whatever. He's sober. He's doing service that day. So who am I to judge that guy, right? I'm no better than that man. Just another drunk trying to help another alcoholic. Maybe somebody can relate to that story he was telling. But what was I doing to, you know, I was disturbed. So, the spiritual action, that's what we're doing. So now, here comes the major promise of step 10. Given that when I got here, I couldn't stop drinking, I couldn't stop drugging. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Period. Let's stop right there for a minute. We ceased fighting anything or anyone. Right? I was all about battling when I got here. You know what I mean? And with the alcohol, it had me. For this time, sanity will have returned. So there you go, sanity. Step two, restored to sanity. Step two is not talking about the insane things I did after drinking, right? It wasn't talking about my DUIs, my homelessness. That's not the insane thing they're talking about. If I know this book in the context in which they're speaking, the sanity is knowing that I have this disease, knowing that when I put it in, I can't stop, and putting it in anyway, that's insane. But here it's telling me in step 10, sanity will have returned. We seldom be interested in alcohol and liquor. If tempted, we record from it as a hot flame. I never record from alcohol whatsoever. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. Like, I can't explain it. I just know that when I started drinking, I crossed an invisible line where I couldn't stop. I do the work. I don't know when it happened, but there's something happened where when I see liquor, it doesn't affect me. Like, I can go anywhere. Today, I'm a free man. My brother got married. I was the best man at his wedding. He wanted to go to a strip bar for his bachelor party. Imagine that. I'm in there drinking Sprite while these guys are getting tore up. Before I got sober, there was no way I was going. We will see that our new attitude, there's that word again, our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. Now imagine that. Imagine if you're new, you're sitting here and you're white knuckling it, right? You can't watch a football game because there's beer commercials. You can't drive down 95 because there's a billboard. Any of that stuff. That's not happening anymore in step 10. That is the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. Hence, I am recovered. I am a recovered alcoholic. I still have the allergy of the body, but as far as the obsession is concerned, I don't have it anymore. Recovered. We are neither cocky, nor we are afraid. Neither cocky nor we're afraid. Confidence is not cocky, right? Speaking the truth is not cocky. Having a passion for this thing is not cocky. That is our experience. What's your experience? What's your experience in this deal? Is that living for you? This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. He's putting a condition on it. Now this right here, nuts and bolts of it right here. Because how many people, I talked about it a couple weeks ago. I've known a guy who had 25 years sober, doing the deal, right? New Wesley Parish was doing the deal. But something happened. It is easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. Now, what that means to me is I think the relapse happens way before the drink of the drug happens, right? I think that my mind starts, I stop doing this deal, right? I stop sponsoring guys. I stop doing service. I start cutting corners. I start hitting on newcomers. I start going to the casino, right? All this stuff that I did out there. I talked about it before. Old Keith would drink again. What I mean by that. The guy I uncovered in 4 and 5, those character defects, once I start exhibiting those things, I'm drinking again. It's not a matter of if. I mean, when. It's going to happen. What am I doing on a daily basis to ensure that that doesn't happen? Says we are not cured of alcoholism, which I just talked about. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Now, people like to call these things maintenance steps, right? To me, to maintain means to stay stagnant. I'm not maintaining anything. I'm growing, hopefully. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our own willpower along this line all we wish. Remember back in the beginning of the book, willpower was a bad thing for an alcoholic. It is a proper use of the will. So step 10 for me, it's every day. It's 4 through 9 all the time. If I'm doing 4 through 9 all the time, it's a pretty good chance that I'm not going to pick up a drink or a drug. I'm not going to act out. And if I do, I talked about this a couple weeks ago, I surround myself with people that expect more from me than I do of myself, right? Am I hanging out with the people that are co-signing my crap? They're going to call me on it. This is a way of life for me today. Do I do it perfectly? No, I do not. But I don't go to bed at night, for the most part, with a resentment. I talked about that emotional hangover. The next day that me and Allie had our little blow-up after Thanksgiving, I literally thought that it was over for us, right? And I wasn't talking to her. I was right. She was wrong. She was right. I was wrong. We woke up that morning, didn't say two words. About an hour into it, after our meditation and coffee and whatever, we sat down in the living room, we talked. And the beautiful thing about this thing is walking a journey with her is she's doing the deal, right? We're both doing the deal. And when things happen, she goes to her people, I go to my people, but we come back and we hash it out, we work it out. That wouldn't have happened in the past. Before, it would have been, I'm right, you're wrong, and until you admit you're wrong, it ain't happening. Yeah. I'm packing. Because it's my money anyway. Today, it's not about that. It's not about how it looks. It's not about me being right. Because do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? You got to ask yourself that. And the cool thing about recovery is this. Like we talk about the steps. You know, you can gauge your own progress in this thing. You can gauge if you're half measuring it. You can gauge if you're picking and choosing or if you're a la carte in this thing. But the beautiful thing about this thing is, on any given day, especially with step 10, I can recommit. I can recommit. No matter if you're here a day, 30 days, a couple years, 20 years, you can recommit. It's here for all of us. And I always, you know, like I said, I had good teachers. And Joe had posed a question to us, and we posed it to our guys at the house, you know. What is your legacy going to be? Right? What's going to live in the hearts and minds of other people for knowing you? A better question. This might be a little bit morbid, but so what? Ask yourself, who's going to be at your funeral? What are they going to say about you at your funeral? Right? Because we're all going to die. We all got an expiration date. Question isn't how we're going to die. how we're going to live. So next week, we'll talk about step 11. Thank you.
You know, it just dawned on me, you know, when I was new, I had speakers like Pete. I was always curious, I wanted to ask some questions. So at the end of the meeting, Keith is very opposed.